Welcome. This month's program will help us show love and respect in marriage. Here are a few highlights. Is your marriage strained because your spouse opposes the truth? We'll see how Alexandru's love and patience promoted peace in his marriage and ultimately moved his wife, Dorina, to serve Jehovah. We'll learn how Claudius Johnson dealt with changing circumstances. And our new original song reminds us of the joys of marriage based on Bible principles. This is JW Broadcasting for March 2021. Jehovah designed marriage as a beautiful and rewarding relationship between a husband and a wife. When a husband and wife fulfill their God-given roles and they treat each other with love and respect, their marriage is a wonderful and intimate friendship. A marriage that has good patterns, shaped by Jehovah's principles, looks like this well-balanced family circle. But if a married couple over time has set bad patterns in how they deal with each other, this is often the result. Life's going to be a bit rough for them. Let's consider what Jehovah says about the roles of husband and wife, and then discuss how love and respect are real keys to a happy marriage. So what roles did Jehovah give to the man and woman in marriage? Well, Jehovah places the husband as head of the family. Ephesians 5:23 says, "A husband is head of his wife." So that means the husband makes final decisions for the family, and his decisions will reflect his love for his wife, his children, and his understanding of their spiritual, physical, and emotional needs. At 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3, we get a sense, though, of how Jehovah feels about the husband's role. And as we read this together, I want you to imagine Jehovah saying to husbands, "Yes, you're head of the family, but I want you to know that the head of every man is the Christ, and in turn the head of a woman is the man." Sounds a lot like a father-in-law speaking to the groom. "You can marry my daughter, but you better treat her good, because you're responsible to me." Well, Jehovah's giving a very clear message for husbands. Jehovah will hold you accountable to him for how you treat your wife. It's something for us husbands to think about, isn't it? Well, what about the role of a wife? Jehovah assigned wives as a beloved partner to her husband. And as partners, they can discuss important family matters and work together to make their marriage a success. Jehovah placed the woman under the headship of the man. And as such, her role is to be in subjection to him. At Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22, it says, "Let wives be in subjection to their husbands as to the Lord." Subjection. Said a certain way, it almost sounds bad. You have to be in subjection. But is the subjection of a Christian wife to a Christian husband a bad thing? No. See, subjection, as described in the Bible, is not about being subservient. It's about her role in the marriage. Your partners, each with a beautiful role to fulfill. We could illustrate it with watching a couple ice skating. As they move gracefully across the ice, do you think to yourself, how come they never let her hold him over her head? Well, no, you look at him, you look at her, it's obvious who should hold who over their head. Well, just as we admire and respect a woman's role as an ice skating partner, a husband deeply loves and appreciates his wife's role as his partner, as they work gracefully together to make their marriage a success. Well, now that we've briefly reviewed the roles for husbands and wives, let's read together a key scriptural principle at Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33 that shows how Jehovah wants husbands and wives to fulfill their roles in marriage. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 33. "Each one of you must love his wife as he does himself. On the other hand, The wife should have deep respect for her husband. Well, the obvious message in this scripture is that husbands should love their wives, and wives should respect their husbands. However, there's another way to look at this scripture and learn something about husbands and wives. Jehovah God is telling us what each mate needs. Men need respect, and women need love. Now, this is not to say that men don't need love and women don't need to be respected. However, it does mean that men tend to emphasize respect and status, and women often emphasize intimacy, connection, and love. This perfect principle can help us to understand why our husband or wife may act or feel a certain way. Now, this difference in emphasis affects many areas of married life. Let's consider three examples of how this powerful scriptural principle of love and respect can give us insight into how a husband and wife talk to each other, how they solve problems, and how they act in the company of others. Let's consider our first example, how they talk to each other. Now, since a wife's emphasis is on being loved, her conversations often stress friendship and connection when she talks to her husband. She's eager to share the details of her life with him and in this way become closer to him. She wants him, in turn, to share with her the details of his day in life. Husbands, your wife feels loved when you learn to communicate with her in a way that tells her you truly care about her. She places great emphasis on conversation and sharing her life with you, and likewise you sharing your life with her. For example, a wife tells her husband about something that happened to her that day. He grows impatient with the story and interrupts, or changes the subject, or offers a quick solution. How does she feel? Why can't he listen to the whole story? Has he lost interest in me? It's important that husbands give their wives their full attention as they speak. After a long day at work, his mind may be focused on events that happened to him that day, and he may, without realizing it, feel that the events or conversation of his wife aren't on important subjects. So he may be inclined to play down the events in her life as unimportant or trivial, while events he talks about are substantial and important because they happen to him. Well, such a feeling over time can truly discourage a wife. A husband's disinterest in her stories and events of her life feels a lot like disinterest in her. The advice of Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 5 is good for husbands. It says, "The thoughts of a man's," or we could say in this case, woman's, "heart are like deep waters, but the discerning man draws them out." That's great advice for husbands. Husbands, when you draw your wife out, let her speak from her heart. That's an indication of great love and affection for your dear wife. Men, on the other hand, often view conversation differently. A husband comes home and his wife asks, "How was your day?" He says, "It was okay, nothing special." But later that night, when they're with a group of friends, he tells a story about what happened at work. And she wonders, "Well, why didn't he tell me that when I asked about his day?" Well, since a man's emphasis is on respect, they often use conversation to establish respect and status with others. A husband may feel that his wife already respects him, so there's no need to tell her the story. Wives, you can encourage your husband to share his life with you by being interested in his work and activities. If you tell him, "Don't talk to me about all that work stuff with me," he won't, and you'll cut yourself off from a part of his life. Show him you're proud of what he does to support the family. Be interested in what happened to him, how he feels about things, or challenges that he overcame. While you may not find his work all that interesting, remember, it is important to him. Let's consider our second example, how they solve problems. Now, I want you to imagine a husband and wife, they're in a car, they're looking for an address, and they're lost. And the wife suggests that they ask someone for directions. She's thinking, why won't he ask? He's thinking, why can't she just let me find it? You see, since the man's emphasis is on respect, he's trying to avoid looking lost to a stranger. The act of asking someone else for directions may make him feel like he's in a lower position. Finding their way is a challenge to him, and he wants to show his wife that he can find it on his own. For the woman, such an idea may not come to mind. She may view it as a simple interchange between them and a stranger. They get help and directions, and they find out where they're going. At 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 33, Jehovah tells us, "But the married man is anxious how he may gain the approval of his wife." Wives, your husband is anxious to have your approval and respect. But on balance, husbands have to be careful that an emphasis on respect doesn't become unreasonable. It won't hurt us to ask for directions or help at times. On the other hand, a wife needs to be careful that she doesn't show impatience by her words or tone as her husband works his way through a problem. A wife who clearly understands her husband's desire to solve problems for the family will understand his actions and will do her part to support him, even in the little things around the home. Now, this support in the little areas of life builds his confidence in her support and can be a major factor in whether a husband takes the lead in larger matters. Our third and final example, how they act in front of others. Have you ever seen a couple where one of them is telling a story and the other is constantly correcting the details? Or the husband is trying to give some direction and the wife corrects or challenges the direction? Or the husband is telling others some unflattering story that hurts his wife's feelings? How can Ephesians 5:33 help a wife in these situations? Well, since a husband's emphasis is on respect, he'll be much more sensitive to comments his wife may make in front of others. It can hurt a husband deeply when his wife openly challenges him in front of others. Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 12 has this advice for wives. She rewards him with good, not bad, all the days of her life. So when in public, or when others are around, even close family and children, try not to openly disagree with him, correct him, or attempt to take over what he's doing. How you speak to your husband in front of others is a great way to show your deep respect for him. It also builds respect for him and others, including any children in the family. Well, how can Ephesians 5:33 help a husband act in front of others? Well, when in public, husbands will want to act like the husband in Proverbs chapter 31 and verse 28. It says, "Her husband rises up and praises her." It's common today for husbands to make fun of or even say demeaning things about their wives. But since a wife places so much emphasis on connection and friendship, she can really be hurt when demeaning remarks are said to get a laugh. It makes her feel awful. Husbands, your wife considers you her best friend, the one she shares everything with. If you break that trust, she feels unloved and hurt. Now, the best time to bring matters to each other's attention is when you're in private, or if needed, when you can talk in such a way that others cannot hear what's being said. In this way, a wife shows deep respect for her husband, and the husband shows his love for his wife. So in review, we've considered just three situations that the principle of love and respect can help us to have a successful marriage. How a husband and wife talk to each other, how they solve problems, and how they act in the company of others. A good marriage is hard work. How is your marriage? Would you say that you've developed good patterns or bad patterns in dealing with each other? When was the last time you talked as a couple about love and respect for each other? Jehovah's perfect advice at Ephesians 5:33 can help the marriage of two imperfect people. In just a few words in this verse, Jehovah's sharing with us a key principle of how he designed marriage. He's telling us what each needs and places emphasis on. Husbands put emphasis on being respected, and wives put emphasis on being loved. And this principle forms a key part of the divine pattern for marriage. If you want your marriage to operate as Jehovah designed, then work hard to apply his perfect principle of love and respect in your marriage. Why can we be confident that Bible principles for husbands and wives work? Because they've worked for Jehovah's people in the past. In the following dramatization, notice what wives and husbands can learn from the example of Sarah.
Pioneering where the need is greater wasn't easy. After a long day in service, I had a part to work on. Thankfully, Jess took care of everything so I could focus on my part. She's the best. Poor thing. She was exhausted. Good thing we were turning in early.
William and I couldn't agree on much lately. We couldn't afford this. There had to be something cheaper. But he wouldn't listen. Sometimes, I feel my husband doesn't make the best decisions. I just wish he'd value my suggestions. Frankly, I've given up trying.
...themselves to their husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Hebrews chapter 11 and Isaiah chapter 51 also cite Sarah as a fine example for Christian wives. But Christian husbands can also learn much from carefully examining...
Sarah's example for me. Sarah was willing to move to parts unknown. A life fraught with danger and hardship. She unselfishly supported Abraham, no matter what. Just like my Jessica. She does without, never complains. What a gem. I can do better, letting her know just how precious she is to me. Thank you.
Sarah submissively obeyed her husband. But she also spoke up. She loved her son, and she knew what was at stake. God's promises through Isaac. Even though she knew it would upset Abraham, she spoke up. She must have thought carefully before speaking to him. After all, she called him Lord. Jehovah blessed her for her loyal support of Abraham, even reminding him to listen to her. I knew I couldn't expect Jehovah to whisper in my husband's ear. But did my speech show respect, like Sarah? I needed to tell him how I felt, but I needed to do it the right way. That night, we spoke. And little by little, things started to improve. Imitating Sarah really worked.
In our next video, we'll get to know Claudius Johnson. Even though his wife died over 20 years ago, I think you'll see from his interview that his spiritual qualities and focus on kingdom interest enhanced his over 4 decades of marriage.
Prayer is an important thing. Everything I do, I always go to Jehovah in prayer and ask for his guidance. I was born on the 26th of March, 1923, in Panama. I was baptized on August 1946 at Cleveland, Ohio. I started pioneering in January of 1947. Well, there are a couple of scriptures that have been most influential in my life. One in Psalm 55:22, which says, "Throw your burden on Jehovah, and he will sustain you. Never will he allow the righteous one to fall." One of the most trying experiences of my life was facing the Selective Service Board. I registered as was required by law, and I received a classification of 1A, fit for military service. I then spoke with the society's legal department, and I was instructed to appeal the decision because I was a regular pioneer. I had to go to the draft board, and there I was severely questioned. One of the problems they had was that I had a part-time job, and they felt that that interfered with my being classified as a full-time minister. However, because I was conducting about 12 Bible studies at that time, I took copies of all those records and presented it to the board. The chairman said to me, "Are you saying if we were to talk to all of these people, they would tell us that you're conducting Bible study with them every week?" And I said, "Yes, sir." While they are deliberating, I am praying hard to help them to make a proper decision. In a few days' time, the classification card came as 4D. I was classified as a religious minister, and I lift my thought to Jehovah and thank you, Jehovah, very much. And when I was in the circuit work in Cuba, I had a few encounters with soldiers. It's difficult to understand the tense atmosphere that existed back in those days, the freedom that those rebels had with shooting people and even Batista's people. They didn't have a second thought. I had just got through serving a congregation in the hills, and we took the local bus that ran around that area, and on the highway, two soldiers stopped the bus and ordered all men to come off. They start looking at each of us one by one, sending everybody back on the bus, and they looked at me and said, "You, stay there," pointed a rifle at me and said, "Who are you?" And I explained myself, but they kept pointing the rifle. One of the soldiers said to the driver, "Take off." But that's when you pray hard, and you remember the scripture, Proverbs 29:25. Trembling at men is a snare, but the one trusting in Jehovah will be protected. So the driver said, "No, he's a circuit overseer. He rides with me all the while," and he really defended me and makes me believe that Jehovah's angels intervene. And that's why I say I am a slave to prayer. It's the most important thing in my life. When I came back to the United States, I was being used by the service department in the full-time work. A few years later, I had to give up the full-time work and take care of my family. The adjustment I had to make as a family man was hard because most of my life was occupied in full-time service. But I had to leave matters in Jehovah's hands. We started the prison ministry around May of 1974. It gives you a measure of satisfaction in seeing how the Bible has a very strong influence on individuals. To see criminals turn their life completely around, the Bible changes lives. And that's why pioneering has always been in my heart. And so after my wife died, I felt that the proper thing to do was to get back into the full-time service. And as a result of that, I started pioneering again in 1998. Jehovah God has been good to me. And at my age of 96, I thank Jehovah every day for the health and strength he permits me to enjoy. And I keep on going.
Did you notice that it was prayer that helped Brother Johnson and his family to face a variety of changing circumstances? He continues to display the same spirit at nearly 98 years of age. Are you married to someone who doesn't serve Jehovah or is even opposed to the truth? You'll appreciate the experience of Alexandru and Dorina Vacar.
I started to study the Bible in 1993. At that time, I was 43 years old. I was married for 19 years and I had two children. At that time, I didn't know if I would become one of Jehovah's Witnesses or not, but I accepted a Bible study.
At my husband's request, I started studying the Bible at the same time, but I only studied for about a year. Then I decided, I'm going to stop. I asked him to stop studying too. I told him, "Let's stop studying. This is not for us. We don't understand it." But in a very diplomatic and calm way, he said he would continue. When I realized he would continue studying, I said to myself, "Well, all right then. Just you wait and see. If you really want to continue, I will somehow make you stop studying. In a subtle way, but I will do it." Just seeing him get ready to go in the field service annoyed me so much. I started burying him with household chores, asking him to help me more and more around the house. But calmly and gently, every time he would ask me if he could prepare for meetings. And one time when he asked me if he could prepare for the meeting, yet again I got irritated and said, "You're not going to prepare now. We're going to clean the whole apartment thoroughly." After we were finally finished at midnight, He asked me very calmly if there was anything else he could help me with. It was not easy for him to deal with my efforts to force him to stop studying. And after he got baptized, I tried even harder. But he never retaliated. He stayed calm and endured it.
In this period, I was trying to understand her reactions. But it wasn't easy for me. Hearing her criticisms, those harsh replies, I thought sometimes, I think I'll just give up. It makes no sense to go on like this. I said to the brother who was studying with me about this, I want to stop. And he encouraged me. He said, No, don't stop. Don't quit. Continue. Probably your wife will follow you. These conversations always encouraged me. And when we were finished our study, I would see things from a different perspective. I always loved my wife, and I wanted her to be by my side.
During this period, he often told me how much he loved me. Many times, yes, very often. And sometimes he would ask me if I loved him too. There were times when I would answer him, and there were times when I just smiled and said nothing. And I even thought, hey, this guy really cares about me. I was impressed by his kindness. I was very impressed. Many times I was musing, well, as a man he could hit me, he could be demanding, you will sit down, you know? But no, he never did that. He never raised his voice, never spoke a mean word, never.
When she saw that I did not retaliate, as in I would not reply harshly and I would not talk badly to her, then eventually she would calm down.
In his calm and mild way, he began inviting me to the meetings. He kept on inviting me, and sometimes I was willing to accept. Slowly, I started to attend the meetings.
I was happy. I was very happy when she said she wanted to resume her study.
In August 2006, I started studying the Bible again. And in March 2007, I became an unbaptized publisher. And in July 2007, I decided to get baptized.
I served in the baptism department, and I had the privilege to personally baptize my dear wife. Corinthians 13:4 says that love is patient and kind. Patience means, first of all, being patient for months, years, or maybe even decades. Never give up. Never consider someone as a lost cause.
Even though Alexandru and Irina's marriage was far from ideal for a long time, Alexandru didn't lose his patience. He was calm and loving. That promoted peace, and eventually it moved Irina to embrace the truth. If you have an unbelieving mate, remember Alexandru's example. And as he said, never give up. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 12 speaks of a threefold cord that cannot quickly be torn apart. That's often applied to Christian marriage. But what does that threefold cord mean? And how does it make a marriage successful? We'll learn the answers in our next segment.
So it was summertime, a group of brothers and sisters, we made arrangements to, during the vacation time, to go to the beach. And so during that time, heading to the beach is where I met her. I had met her sisters, but I had not met her.
My grandparents and my aunt were a very important part in raising me and my sisters. They learned the truth first in Ecuador, and we always lived close by. I always went to visit them, and they helped my parents in guiding me into the truth.
The first 3 or 4 years of our marriage, we were about an hour and a half away from my family, and that was really hard on me because I'm close to my sister, so it was kind of hard being so far. To me, that was really far.
I knew early on that one of the most important things that I needed in a mate is someone who loved Jehovah. And they always say, I remember my parents in the meeting always say, find someone who loves Jehovah more than he loves you. And it's easy to say that. But as you find someone, you realize she loves Jehovah more than she loves me. And she had demonstrated through her entire marriage. When it comes, Jehovah is first. I think that is the key for a successful marriage.
I think the biggest challenge we went through in our marriage was our first year in the circuit work. Hard enough moving 3,000 miles away from everyone, starting a new type of life. 2 months later, my grandfather dies. 6 months right after that, my mother dies.
After her mom dies, my mom passed away. This one right after the other.
That was a difficult time for us. All the pain and suffering from losing our moms and loved ones. Many times we felt that we would not continue. It was overwhelming.
The period of time was 8 months and 10 days between the death of Mimi's mom and my mom.
The threefold cord is the routine in which Jehovah is included in the marriage, from reading the Bible together, to going in the ministry together, to doing everyday things together. And as you do this, Jehovah is present in your marriage.
We always think it's our Bible reading. Actually, we don't think. We realize our Bible reading is very important for us. We pick a book, we start reading it, and we know that is what keeps us together.
We were both already pioneering before we got married, and as we got married, we just figured out a way to continue pioneering together. Just make sure to start our spiritual careers together.
So we have to always depend on Jehovah, which is the best person to always depend on.
We spent a lot of time by ourselves driving from city to city, from state to state, and we had plenty of time to reflect, to talk, to draw close to each other, to not only rely on Jehovah, but also be closer between us and spend more time talking about the visit, talking about the friends, talking about how we feel. And I think it was, at the end, it was the toughest assignment, but it was the most rewarding of all the assignments we had had in all these years in the traveling work.
Because it's three of us and Jehovah's an equal part in our marriage, it doesn't matter what we go through, whether it be Peter or I that's having a little bit of a struggle, because Jehovah is there. It's going to keep us united and strong.
And also, it's not just in the things we do while we worship. Yes, we worship together, but it's also all the other things that we do Jehovah's way.
We're best friends and we enjoy spending time together outside of service and the meetings. We like doing fun things outside. We like the outdoors.
When we're facing a difficult challenge, we will go to Jehovah in prayer together. And specifically, Jehovah, help us with this challenge.
Our assignments has helped us to always be with each other because we have the same goals in mind. We're working together for the same purpose. So the same schedule, spiritual schedule, has really helped us to go through these challenging periods in our life.
But knowing that Jehovah is our creator, the sovereign being, he's the one who should tell us what to do. And there is an arrangement. And when you follow his arrangement, there's happiness, there's success.
We're in an imperfect world, but his arrangement works, and we have felt it.
When husbands and wives are united with Jehovah, their marriage is as strong as that threefold cord. The Bible uses another term to describe the unity of husband and wife. They become one flesh. This was the topic of a morning worship program presented by Brother Robert Soranko.
Genesis 2:24 says of a man and a woman who marry that they are to become one flesh. Now that raises some questions. Whose words are those? What do they mean? How can we show that we believe them? And is there a good example in the Bible of a couple who did? Let's start with looking at the context. If you'd open your Bibles, please, to Genesis chapter 2. And we'll start with verse 18, Genesis 2. It reports, "Then Jehovah God said, 'It is not good for the man to continue to be alone. I'm going to make a helper for him as a complement of him.'" Continuing in verse 21, "So Jehovah God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep, and while he was sleeping, he took one of his ribs and then closed up the flesh over its place. And Jehovah God built the rib that he had taken from the man into a woman, and he brought her to the man. Then the man said, quote, 'This is at last bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. This one will be called woman, because from man she was taken,' unquote. That is why a man will leave his father and his mother, and he will stick to his wife, and they will become one flesh." So our first question is, whose words are these? Adam's? No, the only words attributed to Adam are when he waxed poetic in verse 23, and you can see that from the opening and closing quotation marks in that verse. Well, then it must have been Moses' words, because after all, he wrote the Bible book of Genesis. No, he was not present at the time of the first marriage. He did not start writing until some 2,500 years later, and even then, he was writing what he was inspired to write. Three Bible writers use this expression, one flesh, Matthew, Mark, and Paul, and it's Matthew who gives us the clue as to whose words they are. So let's turn to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19. Beginning with verse 4. And here Matthew writes and quotes Jesus. It says, "In reply, he," Jesus, "said, 'Have you not read that the one who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, quote, 'For this reason, a man will leave his father and his mother and will stick to his wife, and the two will be one flesh,' unquote. So that they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has yoked together, let no man put apart." So Matthew makes it clear Jehovah said those words. And shouldn't that elevate in everyone's mind the sanctity of the marital union? As Jesus said, God created male and female, two complementary genders, and he yoked them together in marriage as one flesh. Now, it's interesting what the Bible Exposition Commentary says about this. "God established marriage, and therefore only God can control its character. It is a union between one man and one woman. God did not create two men and one woman, two women and one man, two men, or two women. Group marriages, gay marriages, and other variations are contrary to the will of God. No matter what some psychologists and jurists may say, no court of law can change what God has established." And those are comments we can agree with. Now, our second question is, what do these words mean, they will become one flesh? Well, of course, the one flesh relationship certainly involves sexual union, but it goes beyond that because it includes a husband and wife who have achieved mental, emotional, and spiritual harmony. They are to have a oneness in their purpose and desires. As Bible translator William Barclay renders it at Matthew 19:5, the husband will be joined inseparably to his wife. So in marriage, a man and a woman are to become each other's closest partner in life. Being one flesh means that they must always be thinking more of each other than of themselves, that they must consider each other in everything they do. So when single people marry, they need to shift their thinking from mine to ours, from me to we. And so they must stop being single at heart and come to be married at heart, not just on paper. Now, our third question is, how can we show that we believe these words? Well, sad to say, many people these days take a very casual attitude toward marriage. And when the relationship becomes strained, they just give up and walk out on their mate. But that is not the Christian way. Marriage is to be a lifelong relationship. Just a few verses later on in Matthew 19, verse 9, Jesus taught that the only scriptural ground for dissolving marriage is when an innocent mate chooses not to forgive an adulterous partner. And that is because sexual relations outside the marriage bond are a gross perversion of the one flesh union. Now let's read Paul's words about this at 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 16. He said, "Do you not know that anyone who is joined to a prostitute is one body with her? For the two, says he, will be one flesh." So the adulterer pulls away from his marriage mate and makes himself one flesh with a third person. That then is the only scriptural basis for divorce. But divorce is a very painful experience. As one sociologist put it, divorce is drastic surgery. To sever the one flesh bond between husband and wife would be like sawing oneself asunder. What though if no adultery has been committed? But for some reason, two people who are married to each other just don't like each other any longer. Divorce is not an option. Instead, they need to remind themselves of what attracted them to each other and work at rekindling those feelings while at the same time looking to Jehovah for help in not only strengthening their marriage, but also their spirituality. Our fourth question is, what scriptural example is there of a married couple who believe this one flesh idea? Turn to Romans chapter 16 and verse 3, please. Romans 16, 3. Here Paul writes, "Give my greetings to Prisca," or Priscilla, "and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus." So yes, Aquila and Priscilla, what a model of a close and united couple living up to what Jehovah meant when he said that a husband and wife should become one flesh. And Paul, who worked closely with them, could not think of that dear brother without recalling the faithful cooperation of his wife. So it's a fine example for Christian couples today. And in every one of the six references to this couple in the Christian Greek scriptures, we find them working together, cooperating without competition or strife, and never is one mentioned without the other. They constantly work together in their home, in their secular work, in the ministry, and surely it was the time spent together in Christian activities that kept their marriage on a high spiritual plane, working side by side to further the kingdom work. Now, you and your marriage mate may be apart for much of the day due to different work and responsibilities. But can you find time each day to eat meals together, to do household chores together, to take walks together, to be together to get caught up on what has gone on in your lives during the day? Aquila and Priscilla prove that being united in activities related to true worship can keep a couple's thinking and goals aligned, and that does strengthen a marriage. For example, studying together, participating in congregation meetings together, sharing in the ministry together, praying together. In doing all of that, a person's interests, priorities, and habits will harmonize with those of one's spouse until, like Aquila and Priscilla, we increasingly think, feel, and act as one flesh. So now we know who said the words. It was Jehovah. We understand what they mean, achieving harmony in one's relationship with one's mate. And we can certainly prove that we believe these words by staying close to our mate and maintaining our marriage bond. And then we have that excellent example of Aquila and Priscilla to abide by.
One flesh, a threefold cord. When a husband and wife apply Bible principles, their marriage endures and is successful. And we'll see that in our new music video. The theme of this month's program was Show Love and Respect in Your Marriage. Sarah's example shows wives how to give their husbands suggestions and husbands how to show appreciation for their wives. We learned the importance of prayer when we face changing circumstances. And Alexandru's love and patience helped his wife serve Jehovah. By integrating Jehovah into their marriages, couples can overcome challenges and serve Jehovah together. Now let's enjoy our video postcard. This month, we visit our brothers and sisters in Guyana. This country of more than 750,000 people is in the northeastern corner of South America. This is a land of lush rainforests, sugarcane plantations, and open grasslands. Temperatures and humidity are high, and the rainfall is heavy. In fact, Guyana means land of water. These brothers are with the Congregation in Charity, a part of Guyana known for extensive preaching done along the river. More than half of Guyana's population is rural, and most people live in villages in the coastal region. This is Baramita, a Carib language-speaking community known for gold mining. The congregation's 119 publishers conduct an average of 228 Bible studies every month. Baramita is also home to a remote translation office. Many people live scattered throughout the surrounding dense jungle, and reaching them requires hours and hours of walking. Because the rainy season is over half of the year, travel can be very difficult. But our brothers and sisters, they're not deterred by the terrain. Now, these are typical dwellings of the Carib community in Baramita. And our brothers, they preach to everyone they encounter, from cassava farmers to gold miners. Our brothers and sisters in the Baramita congregation send you their warm love and greetings. From the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, this is JW Broadcasting.